Finley, 106.7 The Fan. You hear the song there. We are really excited to get on the Rude Guest Hotline and welcome in head coach of the United States Naval Academy football team, Coach Brian Newberry. Coach, thanks for making some time for us.
Yeah, glad to be on. Thanks for having me,
Coach.
I want to start by saying, you know, Pete Medhurst was a good friend of ours, and I know a good friend of yours, and that's kind of how you and I got to meet each other. And just know that we're all thinking of Pete here and always rooting for you guys because of it.
Definitely.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. We sure as heck miss him, that's for sure. And, you know, we'll never score another touchdown where I don't hear into the checkerboard end zone, you know, in his voice. So I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. Big ups to Pete, for sure.
Great.
Well, Coach, we wanted to have you on. I really enjoyed getting to talk with you last year at the Touchdown Club dinner. But you guys also kicked ass last year. You went 10-3. You beat Oklahoma in the bowl game. You win the Commanders in Chiefs trophy. How important and exciting was last year for you to get the Navy program where you want it to be?
Yeah, I mean, it was big. And obviously, you know, what great momentum. You know, anytime, you know, 4 hard years before that. You know, I got here in 2019, and that was the year we went 11-2, and you know, finished in the top 25 and won the CIC, and then you know, COVID struck, and for 4 years, you know, we really struggled and didn't have a winning season, and so, you know, to get things turned around was huge. You know, I think there's a psychological component to that just as much as there is getting better in recruiting and developing your players and doing all those things. And it was rewarding, and I thought, you know, we had a team of guys, the way that they worked, you know, they deserved to have that kind of success. And so, while it was great momentum going into the off season, and certainly something to build on, we're on to 25 now, and it's a new football team, and we're trying to figure out a way to do things better than we've ever done them before, and keep our foot on the gas, and, you know, still be that team that it's got something to prove and a chip on our shoulder, and you know, always something to prove, and always trying to do things better than we've done them before.
Well, go ahead, Jay. I just can only imagine what your last 2 weeks of the season, beating a ranked Army team in Army-Navy and then beating Oklahoma, especially for you, you know, where you grew up in that part of the world, and that had to be pretty sweet, man. Pretty sweet way to end things.
It was. Obviously, the Army game was big for us. That's our number one goal. Most important thing in our program is to have that trophy here in Annapolis, and then to go and beat Oklahoma in a bowl game was really icing on the cake. And like I said earlier, just great momentum going into the off season, a great kind of, you know, mind shift for, you know, for what we can do around here and what we can expect from ourselves, you know.
Coach, as coaching on the Naval Academy, how fun is it for a coach knowing you have those guys that are dedicated solely for that? Like, you know, not like all the other guys that are, they're here 1 year trying to go somewhere else the next, you know they're going to be there.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we're a unicorn in college football.
Oh, yeah.
Always have been, especially nowadays with this era of college football, with the portal and the NIL and all those things. We're relatively, you know, untouched by that. And so you start off with a kind of young man that you get to coach here on a daily basis, which is phenomenal, you know, and we're still truly a developmental program. And so guys, you recruit, right, you develop relationships with those guys, and you get them here, and that relationship continues to develop and grow, and you get to see their growth from the time they get in here as plebes, you know, year in and year out. And this place is tremendous in the way that it develops young men. And the great thing about coaching here at the Academy is they're getting a lot of the same messaging, you know, on the yard that they do when they come over here in our football building. And so there's carryover. But it's a dream come true to come to work here every day and to still coach in a developmental program where you know you can have an impact on young men. They're going to go out and do phenomenal, exceptional things when they get done here. And so it's a privilege, but it's also, you know, a great responsibility and one that I certainly don't take lightly. But I got to pinch myself coming to work every day, man.
Yeah, we only imagine because we played golf over at the Naval Academy golf course the other day.
That's a hard track.
And they had the it's a hard track, but they had the cross-country team,
doubt.
Men and women. They ran for the whole 4 hours or something we were out there playing. And I'm not talking about jogging. I'm talking about running.
Yeah.
So I can imagine what the football team does.
No question. And these guys, I think what people don't realize is just, you know, to play FBS football is a full-time job. And then to do it here at the Naval Academy, when you're taking chemistry and physics and engineering and all the things that these guys do and juggling their military responsibilities as well. It just has so much respect for these guys and the way they're able to compartmentalize things and forces them to grow up pretty quick, that's for sure.
Totally.
Talking to Navy head football coach Brian Newberry here on the Rude Guest Hotline. If you'd like to give Coach Newberry a follow, it's @_CoachNew. Obviously, the season kicks off this week, Saturday, against VMI at home in Annapolis. And, you know, you guys have always a packed schedule looking ahead. Notre Dame's in November, and then Army-Navy's always that, you know, I guess second or third weekend in December. Yeah. How do you feel about the boys this year?
I feel good. I feel good about this team. I always go back and look at the body of work, you know, going back to January. You always look at the leadership. It's one of the most consistent teams that I've been a part of in regards to the way these guys show up to work every day. There's a really, really high standard in our program. I thought our seniors last year, you know, their big deal was just leave a legacy and how this thing's supposed to be done. And they did that. And I think we picked up, you know, right where those guys left off. And these guys want to honor that legacy, and they want to build on it. But if you just look at the body of work, which is the most important thing to me, and the consistency and the discipline, you know, we're a team that I feel like deserves success. And obviously you don't always have it just because you deserve it. But they've done all the right things up to this point. I like the leadership. Obviously, we got a lot of good returning production. But we'll have 9 guys on Saturday getting their first start, you know, in a Navy uniform. Some of those guys have played snaps for us, but I feel good about the work, you know. And I think there's a lot of potential there. Now we just got to go out and play to our standard and play our style of football, and I think we'll be all right.
Coach, you said something interesting to me when we were chatting at the dinner about how kind of this new era of NIL and transfer portal almost. Not that anything is easy to win at Navy, right, with the intellectual and all the demands on these young men. Mm-hmm. But you're able to separate kind of who you're looking for in a way that maybe some other schools aren't. How does NIL and the transfer portal impact your ability to recruit?
Well, I think, first of all, the transfer portal, high school players aren't getting as many opportunities as they used to. And so that's given us access to more players that are available, which allows us to be a little more selective about the guys that we take. Now, if you look at the last 2 recruiting classes, they look different than the previous classes as far as size and length. You know, we dive into the intangible piece of things. We want to find guys that are a fit here at the Naval Academy, that are going to thrive here. And it's about more than football here, too. That's got to be a part of it, obviously. But that piece is helping us. You know, I think in regards to NIL, you know, the players are getting paid a lot of money coming out of high school. The Power 4 guys, we weren't in those conversations to begin with, really, right? And so, you know, some of the mid-majors are paying guys, mostly transfers. But if a kid values a degree and understands what the Naval Academy can do for his future and understands that the NIL comes on the back end here, it's something that lasts the rest of his life, not just the next 4 years. I think that resonates with kids. I think the fact that we don't go into the portal and recruit over guys, we want the guys that we recruited, and we're going to develop them and keep them here. I think that resonates with the high school players and certainly their families. And so when we get them here and we talk through all that stuff and they see the value in it, I think that helps us quite a bit. And obviously, you know, the difficult thing for us is, you know, we can lose guys in the portal, and we can't go out and replace them. So we got to do a great job of doing things the right way here and retaining our players and developing them. And didn't lose a single player in the portal this year that played a snap for us, you know, the previous season. So that's an indication that we're doing things the right way. These guys are so connected here. I mean, this truly is a brotherhood. These guys care about each other. They love each other.
Probably not a lot of programs
that gets created here.
Yep.
No, I mean, it's hard, right? Yeah. You know, you're talking to your friends that are coaching different places. I mean, you know, the conversations I have with recruits is, all right, if you go to public school X, you may play on 8 different teams in your time there. You know, it's not different just year to year. It's semester to semester now. And so that's something you want to be a part of, you know, or do you want to come in with your fellow freshmen and graduate with those guys and serve with those guys and develop those relationships that are going to last you the rest of your life, that are deep and meaningful. or is it just about football and just about a paycheck, you know? So, and that draws a certain kind of young man into our program. And like I said, we've got phenomenal kids here. We try to recruit the best and the brightest from all over the country. And we've been able to do that at a higher level the last couple of years. And I think that's only going to get better for us.
Well, Coach, we'll be rooting for you. I know you're a busy man. Thank you for making time for us. Looking forward to seeing the opener on Saturday.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Appreciate it. Take care, man.
Coach Brian Newberry, United States Naval Academy midshipman, rooting for the Mids this Saturday and every Saturday going forward.
There is there are now multiple reports out there that Washington is gauging interest and that there are multiple teams interested in trading for cornerback Noah Igbinoghu. There you go. They're comfortable with everything they have. What could they get for him? I honestly have no idea. I would consider his value to be higher than Brian Robinson Jr.'s, believe it or not. So maybe some sort of conditional fifth rounder, or a fifth round pick. But that's a guess. All right, college football gets underway in earnest. I mean, there was a few games last weekend. But we get the full week one. There are games Thursday night, Friday night, and then Saturday. It's Texas, Ohio State, high noon on Fox from Columbus. Number one versus number two. First time in history that one's met two in the opening week of the college football season. Stanford Steve from Scott Van Pelt's ESPN Sports Center and from ESPN's College Game Day was on my podcast the other day. Steve is very much a college football guy and makes picks every Saturday. Did very well with his picks last year on College Game Day. He'll be part of the crew with Reese Davis and Kirk Herbstreit and all the guys this Saturday. By the way, Lee Corso's final game day leading into the 12 o'clock games at noon. I started off by asking Steve if the game Saturday at noon, Texas and Ohio State, if that is a game that features the two teams that will be standing at the end.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Not in my opinion. I think the two better teams are playing at Clemson that night.
Wow.
I really diving in on this stuff. I look at, it's really different this year, Kevin, because last year when we had this conversation, you know, you talk about the Will Howards, the Cam Wards, you know, the guys that were coming to a school for 1 year and that the school was buying in on a 1 year transfer quarterback. Now, when you look at it, a bunch of the teams, it's all quarterbacks that have been within the program. You look at Arch, right, at Texas, come through the program, staying at Ohio State. He committed when Saban was the coach at Alabama. When he retired, he left for Columbus. You go down, Nussmeier at LSU, Klubnik at Clemson. So Aller at Penn State, the Carr kid at Notre Dame, Ty Simpson at Alabama. Everywhere you look, Miami's like the one outlier that's going with the transfer. So I think there's a comfortableness within teams that have their guy, and there's not this not knowing of if this is going to work out. You know, does that make sense to you? Like, they've seen these guys.
Yeah, right.
And so I like that for a sense. I talked to people at Alabama and Georgia. There's a real strong, quiet confidence where it's like, hey, go ahead. Talk about Ohio State. They won it last year. And talk about Texas with Arch. And talk about Clemson with Dabo being back. Like, they like what they have at those two schools. And they're laying in the weeds. And have some opportunities early on to really show what they have. So I lean towards I did a top five, and I had Clemson 1, Penn State 2, Notre Dame 3.
Wow.
So
no Texas, no Ohio State.
No, I believe they were Texas lost a lot on the line of the scrimmage, man. Like, everybody's going to talk about Sark and the creative play call and this and that. But, like, they had NFL guy after NFL guy after NFL guy on the offensive and defensive line drafted. In Ohio State, I just think there's Ohio State's never going to rebuild. But as they reload, there's things that you want to see. And it sounds like they want to see more out of the quarterback. And that's why Keenholz, you know, hung around with saying longer than people expected. But I love the idea that they're playing each other in these big early games, because one loss doesn't crush you anymore.
Right.
And also, with no preseason games in college, you really find out what you got. And you have plenty of time to make up for it. And that's the best thing about college football now. I mean, Ohio State lost the worst possible game they could have last year and got it together and won the national championship.
That game was on the other night on the Big Ten Network.
Yeah.
I just still can't believe Ohio State lost to that Michigan team last year.
Yep. And,
crazy.
And to their credit, they come back and they win the national championship. You know, like, that's the good stuff. That's like, I don't know if Ryan Day gets enough credit for that and what he was up against, knowing how long that 2 weeks was.
Remember, we were talking about job security after they lost that game.
Yep.
So you and I talk a lot about quarterbacks when we have these conversations, and I don't think this is going to be any different, because I just don't get the excitement over Cade Klubnik. Why do people think that he actually has a chance to be a Heisman Trophy winner and the first pick in the draft next April?
I just look at what he's done in the second year of that offense. And secondly, he's got NFL receivers now. And it's been so long since Clemson. I mean, going back to the Deshaun Watson days where they had guys. But I also look at last year where they lost their running back, Mafah, who's on an NFL roster somewhere. And they really had to throw the ball. And then you go back to the situations that they were in where it was must win, you know, in the ACC championship game. And I actually watched the Texas-Clemson game last night. There's some freak turnovers off tip balls in that game. But I just – I mean,
Texas was the better team, though.
Yeah, for sure. But, like, it was one of those, is this a three-score game or is it a one-score game, you know? Like, going into that game.
God, I had Texas for the limit in that game last year. Loved them. I just thought Clemson was just so overrated. Just did not like them. In part because of the way I felt about the quarterback. But anyway, continue. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, so when Mafah got hurt, he had to shoulder a bunch of his stuff, and he produced. I think it was 36 touchdowns and 6 picks. Through, you know, top 5 rating when you want to look at the QBR numbers, and people want to do that, and people are going to point to their schedule. I get it, but then I look at, like, McShay put out a mock, and like the two defensive linemen are in the top 8 picks. Klubnik's up there, so I it's just a combination of things that I really think he is set up to succeed. I mentioned the receivers when you talk about Williams and Wesco and Moore. You know, they got some wiggle and some juice. And the ACC is not what the SEC or the Big Ten is. So when you go down the schedule, tricky game at Georgia Tech, who I think is going to be very good, and then the game at South Carolina at the end of the year. So it's set up. The road is there. But when you look at this day and age of college football and you talk about returning production, I want that. And nobody has more than Clemson, so that combines with my thoughts on what I feel about their talent, and I love the addition of Tom Allen on defense. I think that guy's a great coordinator, and he left Penn State to take over the Clemson job, and I expect big things from Clemson this year. I've also said if they beat LSU, I could see them going undefeated.
And LSU's had problems with these opening games during the Brian Kelly era here. You know, that Florida State game from a few years ago comes to mind.
They lost twice to them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they lost in New Orleans on a botched extra point. And then the next year they played in Orlando, and Florida State just gave it to them. We saw Keon Coleman and all those guys. They dominated. But I said this to all my LSU buddies down there, too. I'm like, I love your team. I love Brian Kelly. I just don't like you week one. I think they're going to the playoff. The schedule sets up. They absolutely violated the portal as far as defensive linemen. The defense is healthy. They're going to play Perkins at that star position, which gets him in space, and he can rush the passer, which is what everybody wants. They revamped the secondary again, but it's bona fide starters from other programs. And the difference in the Sloan offense, who's their offense coordinator, as opposed to when Jaden was there with Denbrock, that's where I see it. They really struggle to run the football, and they had four offensive linemen drafted. So is there balance? That's where they got into trouble last year when they had that three-game losing streak, too, is they didn't take an onus in running the football. And when I think of LSU, the great teams, that's what they did. They always had a guy there, and there was a balance there. So that's one thing that's got to get fixed for LSU when I look at them is having more balance, because it's only going to help your quarterback when you can run the football and put the ball in the running back's stomach.
James Franklin's team last year had a fourth quarter lead in the national semifinal. They ended up losing to Notre Dame. That was, I think, a necessary run for him. Are they good enough, and is he good enough to win the whole thing?
Absolutely. No doubt in my mind. I go back, and now we're going to do this, Kevin, with these quarterbacks getting millions of dollars to stay in college. Like, I'm sitting there watching that game with Nick Saban, and Franklin decides, all right, there's minimal time left. We're going to go for it. Tie game, we're going to go for it. He put the ball in his quarterback's hand. James Franklin didn't throw that interception. James Franklin did not coach Drew Aller to throw back across the field in a 2 minutes. You know, that's on the quarterback, man. And they're going to get paid this money. They got to take some more accountability. I love Kotelnicki. I still don't understand how Warren didn't get the ball once against Ohio State on the goal line when he ran it down there for you. And I love Knowles coming over from Ohio State. When you look at them and watch them, they are as impressive a team physically now. That offensive line is 7-8 deep. The running backs are back. The receivers they brought in, I read, they had three receivers come in, and they accounted for 23 touchdown catches last year, and the receivers they had last year at Penn State only caught 12, and that includes not catching one ball against Notre Dame. So they addressed their needs. Defense, I think, is going to be lights out when you look across the board of the NFL guys they have there. The schedule is easy, and they get Oregon coming in the 27th, which will be an all-eyes moment because they don't play anybody before that. But no, I expect Penn State to be there in the national championship game.
Digress real quickly. Warren or Loveland, better NFL tight end?
I've watched them both a bunch this spring, and I think Warren is getting there. Warren, we used to call it collision escape, where you're running a route and you just collide into the linebacker, knowing that you're bigger, stronger, faster, and that's how you get open. You know, there's collision releases, all that. Loveland's way more polished as a route runner, but Warren just has to realize he can't do that anymore like he did in college. These guys are bigger and stronger, and he'll find it out. He learned a lot in that first game against the Ravens. Loveland is got serious juice. He'll put up better numbers, and he's more polished. He looks better. So I would leave Loveland.
Interesting. I was surprised that Loveland went before Warren, but you know tight ends for sure. All right.
I just look at the system also.
All right. So
drafted him.
The net of it is you think a better chance of a national championship preview is LSU-Clemson on next Saturday, Labor Day weekend, instead of Texas-Ohio State. Give me a team or two that you think from sort of the back of the pack ends up threatening a playoff berth and could be dangerous when we get to December and January.
Texas A&M. I love what Elko does. They got a schedule that'll give them opportunities. They go to Notre Dame early. They got a quarterback that's back that lit the world on fire last year when he got thrust into it. And then they struggled in their biggest game. Texas, you know, dominated them on the lines of scrimmage, and they scored 7 points in a win-and-take-all, go to the SEC title game at home. I was there, and it was tough to watch. They got super humbled. But, I think the world of Elko as a defensive mind, they get a kid from NC State in Casey Concepcion, which is exactly what they need. I thought he was the best receiver in the portal, and that's a kid that Marcel Reed needs. They have an awesome offensive line set up. They're deep there. You know they're going to have talent on defense. Their running backs are extraordinary, and they're a team that is my dark horse in the SEC. I really, really like what they bring to the table.
Sticking in the SEC, how much do you like South Carolina, and how much do you like their quarterback Sellers?
I like Sellers. I don't love the team this year. I think they are a team, when you look at what you lost and you talk about returning, I mean, they lost guys. I mean, that defense was, I put them up there with anybody at the end of the season, you know, with the games that they won. But they're all gone. You know, now, instead of having the young, you know, Stewart opposite three NFL guys on that defensive line, he's all by himself. So now teams can game plan for him. Sellers, I hate to be easy, but like he just has to play more football. You know, you saw the good, but there still are plenty of games in there where it wasn't pretty. And you know, he makes two runs against Clemson, and those are the two biggest plays in the game, and they win. You know, in the bowl game, you know, Illinois gave it to them, and that's going to be more of what South Carolina looks like this year than as opposed to last year. So they are a wait and see team for me. I really like all the Bama, Georgia, A&M, LSU. I like better than South Carolina. I put them in the category, say, with Auburn. Okay. With just so much you want to see. Like, they could knock off a couple of those top teams, no doubt. But you know, when you look at this, can they get to 10-2, or is it more look like an 8-4? I lean towards the 8-4s. There
is the best player in America, Jeremiah Smith, wide receiver, Ohio State.
Yeah, I would lean that way. When you look at what he's capable of doing and having a relationship with Chip Kelly and just being able to talk to him about what he did off the field and hearing what guys, you know, thought of him and the way he stepped into a senior laden team that really needed him and just took everything in stride, I just thought is really, really special. So, yes, I believe he's the best player.
How many games does Maryland win?
Oh, you know, the schedule, if you want, I mean, Penn State and Ohio State and all those, they would die for Maryland's schedule. But Maryland doesn't have the personnel of those teams.
Right.
So when you look at what they're up against, they got a decision to make at quarterback. You know, you got the Martin kid from UCLA, and then you got Malik Washington, who's the local kid who looks absolutely fantastic. And you know, Locks is going to get receivers. They went in the portal and got, I think, Farouk from Oklahoma, stud. But now you look at what they lost. They lost their starting quarterback, their starting running back, both tight ends, top defensive linemen, two linebackers, three defensive backs all transferred out. Like, it's really hard to assess what you have. And, you know, you go to Wisconsin for your first Big Ten game on the 20th, you got to be 3-0 going into that game, and that's a winnable game. And that's kind of where I think it goes, because then, you know, you get Washington, Nebraska coming in. You got to go out to UCLA. I'll say 6-6 they go to a bowl.
Wow.
It's you know, the back end where you got Michigan, like, how beat up are you? It always feels like, you know, well, they don't have depth on the lines of scrimmage, and you know they always had to play Penn State late. And I mean, even a Rutgers team that's going to be improved, you know, those teams are built from the line of scrimmage out. Whereas Maryland, you watch them and it's like, wow, look at that skill guy, look at that skill guy. So you know, a big step is the quarterback situation. If it sounds like they want Malik to be the guy, but you know, you got to be able to protect him, and that's the one thing I worry about. So I. 6-6, I believe, is the ceiling.
At Stanford Steve 82 on X on Twitter. He'll be a part of College Game Day once again, and that kicks off Saturday morning in Columbus, leading into Texas and Ohio State. That game's actually on Fox, but it's also going to be a special occasion, as it will be Lee Corso's final show. By the way, he mentioned Maryland. We have not talked a lot of Terps. We will talk a little bit more leading up to this weekend, maybe even on tomorrow's show. But they really do have one of those schedules that if they had I think a team from a couple of years ago with, you know, a Leah Tungavailoa at quarterback. They don't have Ohio State and Penn State on the schedule this year. They open up with Florida Atlantic at home in College Park Saturday at noon. They're a 14.5-point favorite. Northern Illinois and then Towson. And then they're at Wisconsin. They've got Washington, Nebraska at home, at UCLA, Indiana at home, at Rutgers, at Illinois. Illinois, in terms of the schedule, is the highest ranked team preseason they have on their schedule. They're ranked 12th. Michigan is on the schedule late in the year. Michigan's got that highly touted quarterback that basically I think Portnoy and some others paid for to leave LSU and go to Michigan, or renege on the LSU commitment, and then they close with Michigan State. Will be interesting to see if the Terps can put something together and what the quarterback situation looks at looks like. Malik Washington, a 6'5", 230-pound, highly touted quarterback out of the area. We'll see how quickly he gets into the lineup as a true freshman. Looking forward to the Terp season. Looking forward to the opener on Saturday against FAU.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We are streaming live on the free Odyssey app. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. It's Bish, Cakes, EB, and JP. Join us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline, Rude's most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. It's Mike Loxley, Terps head football coach, presented by IT Cadre. Trusted insight from trusted insiders, IT Cadre. Hey, Coach.
Coach.
What's up? How you guys doing?
Can you believe the season is here? It's finally here.
Yeah, I can. It's been about 200 and maybe 75 or 76 days since we last played. And a lot of us around Jones Hill House are excited about the rebirth, the restart of a new season and what it brings.
Yeah. How do you feel about the year? Like, you personally, as a coach, you know, this is your profession. Last year obviously wasn't a good one. Quarterbacks, you know, are gone from last year. You got a freshman quarterback. We're going to talk about him in a second. But how do you feel? How do you feel about the upcoming season?
I really like, you know, our chances. And the reason I like it is because of the foundation that we've been able to put down. And, you know, a year ago, as we talk about, you know, we won't be defined by last year with this 2025 iteration of Maryland football. But we'll be defined by the present, and the present is we have some really talented young players. The present is we've got about 64% of our guys that have never suited up for us. But we think and we know that this is a team that I think will get better with each and every week, because when you're a young team, you don't necessarily know what you have until you go through some stuff. And I'm sure this team is built the right way and has a strong foundation.
I remember last time we had you on, you talked about, or maybe it was just an interview you did with someone, I thought it was with us, we talked about, you know, it was a learning experience trying to manage NIL and everything and keep everybody sort of on the same page. What did you learn from last year regarding all that stuff and that you're putting into effect this year?
I learned that I need to have enough resources to where you pay everybody, pay all the people that have the opportunity to help us create value for our program. And, you know, a lot of times when, you know, the first part of my quote was, I lost my locker room, but they left off it, you know, for 100 and however many years college football has been around, every player had the same scholarship. The scholarship was worth the same to everybody. And for the first time in college football landscape, now all of a sudden I have to teach 18 to 22 year olds how come he doesn't have what little Billy has, and they learn very quickly that you have to create the value to get what little Billy has. And that was a learning curve, because most of these kids weren't used to that. They all had the same scholarship check regardless of the position they played, regardless of how well they played. And this was a learning lesson for them, but the learning lesson for me was I had to have anticipated this and figured out a way to navigate it prior to just all of a sudden unraveling the way it did.
Coach, I know you probably won't get into numbers, but you talked about having the resources, since the rules are a little different this year than they were last year. How much better was that for your roster now that you can spend some more money on some of these players?
Yeah, I mean, it's yet to be determined because obviously we have revenue share, which is a baseline that everybody gets.
Right.
And last year we did not have it, which is why, you know, I was excited and pivoted to where, you know, if you look at how this roster has been constructed, it would be equivalent to going through the draft where you draft players and they get, you get them on rookie deals to where, you know, it allows you to afford them. But once they establish themselves and what they can do, you know, that's where we struggled a year ago because a lot of the players that we were developing that were young, you know, had opportunities to go elsewhere. And when you don't have the resources, which a year ago we were probably in the bottom, the bottom two or three. I don't know what everybody else's NIL situations are, but all I've ever asked anybody here on campus is to put us in the middle. If you get me in the middle, as I've shown, when things are similar or equal, we went to three straight bowl games, won three straight bowl games, which hadn't been done here. And so the only ask I've ever had is, hey, don't expect championships if you're resourcing me at the bottom. And I can tell you that Damon Evans, my predecessor, tried to do what he could to provide the resources. And I can tell you that Jim Smith, who we brought in, who has a background in what I call the business of football and not necessarily football business, even though he spent a lot of time with the Atlanta Falcons, he's got a great vision for what we need. And so I can tell you it's better than what it was a year ago, where we rank, where it is. All I've ever asked is if you put me at 8, 9, or 10 in this 18-team league, then you can judge me.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Locks, we know you've been coy with naming a starter. We don't expect you to do that here, but you've got a lot of youth in
but
that.
But he can if he wants
can
to.
If you want. I mean, you're more than welcome to. I know
how
you
much
want
NIL money y'all going to get.
But you do have a lot of youth in that quarterback room. You got Malik Washington, a freshman. You've got at least two redshirt freshmen in there. Justin Martin is a transfer. He's the guy with the most experience. Talk about just how green that quarterback room is and what it's been like coaching them up over the summer.
Yeah, it's an inexperienced quarterback room, but it sure is pretty talented. And you know, obviously the addition of Pep Hamilton coming here to help us reset this thing on offense has been very beneficial, as Pep is one of the best, if not the best, quarterback coaches. You know, he's coached guys like Alex Smith, and he coached Andrew Luck, and he had Justin Herbert. So dealing with rookie young quarterbacks, which he has, and as well as myself, having had a freshman by the name of Jalen Hurts and a true freshman, Tua Tagovailoa, in my resume, we have the experience of dealing with an inexperienced quarterback and being able to manage how we bring whoever we name the starter along throughout this season.
Now, you guys have had good receivers over the years. I think you lost your top two receivers. What should we expect? I think you brought over a transfer from Georgia State. What should we expect from the Terps wide receivers?
Yeah, you know, that's a position group that we know a little bit about. We've had some great ones that have played in this system, whether it's here, my three different stints, or whether it's other places I've been. And I have no doubt that we feel like we've brought in the right kind of guys to complement whoever the quarterback is to be able to be give us a chance to make plays on the perimeter, which we've always had. I really like, you know, bringing in a Jahlil Farouk from Oklahoma, Caleb Webb from Tennessee. You throw Octavian Smith Jr., who's been a stalwart for us since his freshman year, making big plays. And then the addition, like you said, of Dorian Fleming, our tight end. We have the weapons, inexperienced, but very talented, and we get a chance to see, really evaluate them against the FAU team that will be coming in here, and they've got a lot of new people, and mm-hmm. it'll be a great first showing to see who we are, to start to see who we are.
So with Malik, you know, just kind of watching highlights from his days at Spalding, what kind of player is he? Dual threat, I assume, just based on the highlights that I'm reading. He's a big kid, 6'4"-ish, right? 6'4", maybe 210 or so. What kind of arms does he have? Were you impressed with him in camp? And talk to us about Malik.
Yeah, well, the good thing is obviously Malik, Christian, and Justin, J. Martin, K. Mart, as we got two Martin guys in the back, the quarterback room. All three of them are, as I've said, similar stature. They're all 6'5 guys that are 230 pounds. They all have the ability to extend plays with their feet athletically. But the thing I've been so impressed about all three of them is their ability to make the throws that are necessary to open the field. You know, I've been places where you couldn't work the the entire 53 yards of football field because you don't have the arm strength. But they all three have, as I like to say, the same genre of skill. When you talk specifically about Malik, the thing that's really jumped out to me is the maturity that he has shown as a true freshman. I hate comparing, but I've said this. I haven't been there with a true freshman, and Jalen Hurts. Jalen grew up a son of a coach, so he was always around adults, and was had kind of an old soul. Well, Malik kind of has that feel for me. It's a maturity there that you see, and I think that lends itself well for playing that position if, in fact, he becomes the guy.
And what about the run game? All right, Nolan Ray right now the number one RB? Is it going to be a committee?
We've always played a couple of guys, and if, you know, Nolan is obviously the guy that has the most experience that's returning. Between him and DeJuan Williams, we see those guys as, you know, 1A, 1B. You'll see a lot of both of those guys, as we've always done that position group. But I can tell you, Nolan is finally probably as healthy as he's been since he's been here. He's a guy that missed, you know, his senior year with a meniscus, and then his last year he was not 100%. He ended up having some medical work done this off season that I think will allow him to really be the best version of himself as a running back for us, because he's finally healthy and we've been able to get him get his body right.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned playing Florida Atlantic. They bring in a whole new coaching staff. Zach Kittley, who I believe is the OC at Texas Tech. When he comes in, they bring in a bunch of transfers. I think their quarterback is, I assume he's going to be the start of this kid, Caden Veltkamp, who we brought in from Western Kentucky, right?
It came from Western Kentucky.
Yep.
The Texas Tech, you know, Coach Kittle has a background with the Texas Tech.
They're just going to throw it all over the field, it seems like.
Well, you know what? Here's the misconception, because, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, who's right across the river here from us, mm-hmm. is a Texas Tech guy, but they do know how to run the football. They just do it out of a spread sets, which we know a little bit about. But, you know, their air raid have been an air raid system is what his background shows, which is the Mike Leach invented system where they sell you on that they're throwing it all over the place, but they treat, you know, the quick screens, the bubbles, the noun screens as runs. And then as you open up your coverages and spread you out, they put themselves in position advantageously number-wise to be able to run the ball. So, you know, we got to do a good job of limiting and tackling well on the perimeter, but also getting our hands up. And you probably won't get a bunch of sacks against this style of system because they get the ball out quick.
Right. And they've got a bunch of new players. I mean, new coaching staff comes in, a bunch of new guys, just kind of looking at their depth chart right now.
Yeah, they're I think, one returning starter
wow.
all three phases. But they've got some players, like you said, Caden Veltkamp. And, you know, some of the things they do scheme-wise is really creative in that the way they create angst on a defense is through tempo, through using all 53 and a quarter of the football field. The width of it, so that they can get really good players. And again, they're located in a hotbed for speed and talent down in Florida, in the South Florida area. They try to get their speed and space, and that's where we've got to do a great job of tackling and getting the ball on the ground on defense.
Mm-hmm. You're avoiding Ohio State. You're avoiding Penn State. All right, you got to play Michigan. And I know there's no easy outs in the conference. But just kind of talk about the Big Ten schedule in general that you're seeing. Your first game in conference will be up in Madison on September 20th.
Yeah, I mean, the Big Ten from top to bottom, as we all know, is the best, if not one of the best football leagues there are in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no doubt being able to finally maybe miss a couple of these teams. I think all three of the teams from our league that made the playoffs we don't have, but there's nobody sitting back here saying, phew, as if we don't play a Nebraska, a Washington, a Wisconsin, a Michigan, Michigan State to end the season. So there'll be no easy days, but you know what? We don't expect there to be easy days. That's why we joined this league. That's why we recruit the way we recruit, because we want to play against the best, and there's no doubt. Our schedule, I think, you know, fits kind of what this league is all about, is that on any given Saturday, anything can happen, and we've got to put ourselves in the position to be on the right side of the ledger this year, like we were able to do, you know, for three straight years.
You still having fun, Coach?
first game, and there are just so many unknowns.
Yeah.
So many unknowns about, you know, who we are as well as the opponent. But this is the feeling you get as a coach and kind of as a parent, where you just want your children to do well. And they've put in so much work over the last 200 and however many days it's been. And you just want them to go out, play well, do well, show well, to prove themselves and to prove ourselves right.
That's one of the greatest quotes of all time.
It's a good one.
We're going to have to cart that up.
But it was good.
Yeah, we might have to bleep it, but yeah. We're replaying that. That's a great quote. Thank you.
No doubt.
Well, good luck, Coach. Hopefully we can talk to you a few times this year. But we're just happy that the season's here. And we don't have to talk about Terry McLaurin signing a contract anymore. We can start focusing on games, both pro and college.
You got it, man. All right. Appreciate you.
Best
guys.
Of luck, man.
All right. Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yep.
It's Coach Mike Locksley, presented by IT Cadre. Trusted insight from trusted insiders, IT Cadre.
By the way, perfect weather conditions for the game. High of 78 on Saturday. No chance of rain. And it's not going to be 105 degrees, what it feels like sometimes when you go to a Terps game in late August or early September.
No, it's
maybe I'll go. And good conditions. My son's starting college, but then I feel like I'm getting in his way in the first couple of days. In the first couple of days, meet new friends.
Let him do his thing. Go to a game in a few weeks.
Daddy can't be there.
You don't
want to
be a helicopter
new,
dad.
Yeah. When he sees his new floor mates and everything.
Yeah.
Unless you're getting them beer.
Then that always goes over well. That's big. It's a good thing. I don't know if it's good, but it's a bonding thing.
It's a rite of passage. It's what happens.
1-800-636-1067 is the number. Coming up next, we'll open up EB's entertainment page. Don't go anywhere.
Let's talk college football, and let's look ahead to what I believe will be the official kickoff to the fall. The official kickoff to the football season, so to speak. And that is noon this Saturday, when number one Texas plays number three Ohio State, and the college football season officially gets going. Because I know they had a week zero. I think they had a week one half, and then a week 0.46 was like Akron against somebody. Danny Cannell is on the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Danny, welcome back on the show. We love talking college ball with you. How are you, man?
I appreciate you guys for having me on, man. It's great to catch up. I'm a little disappointed you're not fired up for some of the Thursday and Friday night action, but the point is still the same, and you guys are right. That Ohio State game has been, Texas game has been circled on everybody's calendars. The minute that game last year went final in the playoffs with Ohio State knocking them off, that has been one that people have been anticipating again. So I agree with you. That is going to be an insane atmosphere.
Oh, don't get us wrong. We'll watch those other games too. We'll get back to those. But yeah, those are appetizers. And I'm an appetizer guy. I like wings. I like mozzarella sticks. But the entree here, the steak and the potatoes, is noon on Saturday. And Danny Cannell joins us courtesy of Bet Online, looking ahead to the game with us. So preview it for us. What do you expect to see in one of the most anticipated season kickoffs that we've seen in a long, long time?
Boy, I tell you, it's hard to predict a lot of these week zero games because there's so many question marks, right? I mean, they're both teams are breaking in new quarterbacks, and I know we've seen a little bit about Arch Manning. We've seen him play a little bit. Julian Sand for Ohio State, we haven't seen at all. And more importantly for Ohio State, they have both new offensive and defensive coordinators. Matt Patricia is taking over the defense. You got Brian Hartline, who's been a longtime assistant coach. Finally, he's getting the call along the, you know, to make the offensive play calls. You've got an entirely new backfield for Ohio State. You've got new pieces for Texas across the board as well. So I think you could see a little bit more of a sloppier affair. I would say even maybe a little bit more of a defensive affair. But even when I say that out loud, I look at these two offensive minds, because Steve Sarkisian is a great offensive mind, and I think about Ohio State and Ryan Day, and Jeremiah Smith is the most electric player in the country on the offensive side of the ball. It's hard for me to believe it, but I do think this will be a little bit more of a defensive affair early before they kind of have that little chess match of what each defense is going to be trying to do.
So I know, you know, the roster's changed so darn much year to year. I mean, I think, was it 14 players Ohio State, Danny, lost to the draft this past year, including a handful of first rounders. But you mentioned Smith. That Texas defense last year, wasn't it one catch for 3 yards? Any of that kind of carry over into this matchup here to start the season?
Yes, absolutely it does. And I think that's, see, this is where one of those things where I think the stat line can be deceiving. And clearly they did a phenomenal job shutting him down. But as a part of that, maybe they forgot to help with Travion Henderson, who took a 70-yard screen pass. Like, maybe they were so concerned with, you know, stopping the most dominant player that we've seen in college football, probably in the last 5 or 6 years, in Jeremiah Smith. That does provide you opportunities elsewhere. Like, Emeka Buka had a pretty good game. Cardell Tate had a good game. And that is where I think probably could be one of the bigger impacts of this game are some of those role players and those new players that aren't the guys that we know. I do think Jeremiah Smith will have a better game. I just think he's one of those guys that you just can't contain that much. I'm sure that game has irked him all offseason long. But I do think you make a great point. I think Texas will be like, all right, we can take that every single time. But that's where some of the other guys have to step up. And that's one of those wrinkles, too. Like, I think Chip Kelly, as the offensive coordinator last year, who's now in the NFL, he was very familiar. All right, he's watching, he's game planning, he's adjusting on the fly in the game. He sees him take away Jeremiah Smith. What does he do? He calls some plays to attack some of the other vulnerabilities in the defense. That's what I'm curious to see, how Brian Hartline adapts to that. But I do have a hunch that Ryan Day will get more involved in the play calling, where he handed it over to Chip Kelly. I think it'll be more of a collaborative effort for Ohio State this season, early in the season especially.
Supposed to be 67 degrees in Columbus at Ohio Stadium. Ooh. Buckeyes narrowly favored by about a point and a half, depending on where you look, as we get ready to put the ball in the air on Saturday afternoon. It's one of those games where it's early enough in the season that it's not going to be the undoing of either of these teams. Does that ding the importance at all, in your opinion, or no?
Yes and no. Like, you're right. I mean, both of these teams can, you know, you get a mulligan almost, especially when you come into this preseason ranked top five. Like, it's smoked, right? And even then, even if Ohio State, which I don't think is likely, let's say they lose by 3 touchdowns, 24-3. Let's just throw out a score. Even if they get the rankings, but they have a whole season ahead of them, and they can still get that mulligan that the 12-team playoff does provide, and they have plenty of opportunities left on their schedule to kind of elevate throughout the year and fight their way back into the top 25. I'll give you two examples from last year. Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois at home in week 3, I think. And maybe it was week 2. I forget what week it was. Early in the season, I thought they were toast. I was like, oh, they're done. What did they do? They ran the table, won impressively, got in. Clemson is another team that, you know, struggled early. Georgia, they had a neutral site game, got smoked against Georgia. Didn't look pretty. It looked ugly. People wrote them off. Now, they still have their struggles, and they kind of took the other access point, which is if you win your conference, it doesn't matter what your record is. And if they didn't win the ACC, they would have been left out on the outside, but they ended up winning that game. So there's still a lot of leeway for those teams to bounce back, but you just kind of look at it as a barometer, like a litmus test for your program. How do we stack up against the best? And regardless of whether it matters or not, I know both these fan bases are going to be overreacting one way or another, no matter how the outcome goes for their team.
Our guy Danny Cannell with us here on G&D. One more about this one before we go to the rest of the weekend at large. The quarterback matchup. So Arch Manning, it's a pedigree. There's a name we've value there. I think we've heard an awful lot about that. But, you know, not a ton of experience still. I think he had a couple wins against teams that you and I could beat. Now you look at Ohio State, young man stepping in there in terms of saying, how do you see that matchup going? It's a pretty big step up in terms of import.
So I would expect both quarterbacks to be a little bit inconsistent. I think they're going to be harped on so much. And this is what I would tell a young quarterback, and I'm sure both these coaches are telling him, you don't have to do too much. Like, the expectations are off the charts. People think you're going to be the superhero. You're going to throw for 300 yards. They're going to expect that out of an Ohio State or a Texas quarterback anytime, let alone ones that come in with kind of the pedigrees that these two do. I think they might struggle somewhat. It's human nature. It's quarterback nature. When you are young and inexperienced, kind of struggle for it to be a little bit bumpy. I think what will be the difference in this game is which one manages the game the best. Like, there will be little decisions that are made, like when to take a sack versus when to throw it away, when to tuck it and run it versus, you know, whether to air it down the field and take that deep shot down the field. Those are little decisions that over the course of time you build maturity through experience that they don't have any of. So they're going to make some very first-year starter type mistakes. It's who can minimize those the most. And if that's the situation, I'm going to lean towards Julian saying, for the sole fact that he's playing at home, that is a huge advantage when you think about communication at the line of scrimmage, making checks for the offensive line to communicate amongst each other. They've got to get things on the same page. And then I go on the flip side, Arch Manning trying to give the cadence, trying to check at the line of scrimmage. For his offensive lineman, they'll probably have to use a silent snap count. So they're having to react to get off the ball in pass protection or in the run game. I just to give a slightest edge to Julian saying because he's at home in the confines of his own place. But Arch Manning, like you said, at least we've seen him. He's been in Texas for 30 months, so he's been around that system. That's pretty comfortable for him. But I still would give the slight edge to Julian saying because he's home.
Danny Cannell on Grant and Danny here on the Fan. Excuse me. Check out Bet Online for updated college football playoff win totals, conference, Heisman, and college football week one lines. I want to pivot to the other of really the huge top 10 games this weekend, and that's LSU-Clemson. This is a night game, ABC, 7:30 kickoff on Saturday. Basically, room temperature at kickoff right now projected to be 73 degrees in Clemson. Is this playoffs or bust kind of for Brian Kelly? These two teams are in a similar spot where they've both few years spinning their tires here. I mean, who needs this season more at this point?
Oh, I think it's Brian Kelly. I mean, Dabo Swinney has multiple national titles at Clemson, and while they haven't been up to that standard recently, they still did bail out a season last year. I mentioned before about them winning the ACC and getting to the playoffs, and they actually played pretty good against Texas. So I actually feel pretty good about Clemson. I think he's almost one of those lifetime contract things. You know, he can I know college football is very fickle, but I do think Clemson fans appreciate what he's done, and he kind of call his own shots. That is very much not the case for Brian Kelly at LSU. He's had a lot of success, and he's been to the playoffs before, but he hasn't won the national title, and he hasn't had that playoff-type run at LSU just yet. And even to add a little bit more insult to injury, the place that he left because he said he didn't think he could win a national championship there, Marcus Freeman just took them to the national championship game. And while he didn't win it, I think people are looking around saying, man, I thought you said this place was hard to win. And Marcus Freeman in his third year takes him to the national title game. So that combined with LSU is a program which has ran off multiple coaches with national titles to their resume. They ran off Les Miles, and that was after an extended period of time, and they thought it was getting a little bit stale. And then they ran off Ed Orgeron just a couple years after he won a national championship. So you want to talk about a fan base that has off-the-top expectations, and reasonably so, because they have so much talent coming through that program. I think Brian Kelly, this is a massive year where it does feel, I won't say national championship or bust, but it does feel like they better make the playoffs or it could get uncomfortable in Baton Rouge for him.
Let me sneak in a quick one here. This is one of the biggest lines I can ever remember seeing. Penn State's a 44-point favorite at home. I get that they're pretty good against Nevada. How for real are they this year? It just feels like I hear so much about them every year, and there's always a couple of losses, a couple of buzzsaws in the Big Ten. Doesn't feel like they can get over the hump there. Are they good enough?
I think they are. I mean, you mentioned kind of the narrative about them every year. James Franklin's record against top five opponents is 1-15. Mm. Like his only win in the one was a hot game against Ohio State that he had, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. So that's even that one's in the rearview mirror. And even last year, I thought that the expanded playoff really did James Franklin a lot of favors because he wouldn't have gotten in last year. And then I'm sure those fans were restless, but they get in, they beat Boise State, they beat SMU, they come up short against Notre Dame, but it gave them a little taste of the postseason life for Penn State fans. So I think they were kind of enthusiastic. The reason I'm buying into Penn State, they're actually my national champion pick. Mm. We're talking about all these teams with question marks. We have a team that actually has answers, and they have answers across the board. They go out, and I know they lost Abdul Carter, but they got denied Dennis Sutton, the defensive edge rusher, who is really a dynamic pass rusher. He should be able to fill those shoes. They go out and get Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator from Ohio State, from the defending national champion. They hire him away. And probably more importantly, they've got several players on the offensive side of the ball that could have gone to the NFL. And much like Michigan 2 years ago, much like Ohio State last year, they all decide collectively as a group, let's come back and try to do something special. And so I feel like they've kind of got this mindset that has worked the last two seasons. And maybe most importantly, and you alluded to it, Their schedule is a joke. They have three complete cake. We're not even going to see Penn State play until week four. Mm. Like, they're not going to have, they could roll out their backups if they wanted to, and they'll be 3-0. But, and then even when they get into conference play, they have a couple tricky games. Like, going to Iowa could get tricky, but it's really a two-game schedule. They get Ohio State on the road, and they get Oregon at home. So I almost feel like they're a lock to go 10-2 at worst. I have them going 11-1, and I'm a believer that James Franklin has been knocking on the door and knocking on the door. They've been getting closer, and because of all the other questions with all these other teams, I'm going to go with the team that I think has the answers.
Danny, as you know, college football is going to spread from Thursday through Sunday, 4 days of kicking this thing off with Sunday
Monday
night football.
Too.
What do we have Monday?
Monday night is, there's always that Labor Day Monday night game.
That's true.
There?
Yeah, there is a thrown-in game probably that I'm not thinking about.
I think it's TCU-UNC. I think Bill Belichick's debut, I think, is Monday night. I think ESPN even changed that game because
I believe
they
want to
get
crazy.
All those eyeballs. Whether they're watching Bill or his girlfriend, we don't know. But I think they jumped on that. But yes, it is I love this weekend because it's really, you know, we don't even get it. We used to get it in the bowl season where you'd have the NFL playoffs. There was kind of a dead area and you could really focus. This is really college football's marquee weekend.
But bring up the Sunday slate because you've got Notre Dame, Miami, 6-10. Another nationally televised kick on ABC under the lights. And another game, you were talking about quarterback changes with guys graduating, you know, figuratively, literally, what have you. Well, Notre Dame and Miami are two teams that are, you have the number one overall pick no longer at Miami, and Notre Dame's moving on without a guy that got them to the national championship game last year.
Yep, and this is another one where a lot of question marks. I do feel like Marcus Freeman's roster from top to bottom is probably stronger. I trust him sort of what he's built there for the last couple years, but that is not to discount Miami because they've been pretty big spenders in the portal. They've got a defense which is pretty nasty, and they went out and got a quarterback from Georgia and Carson Beck, who everybody's cast aside, probably myself included. I still have to see him do it, but he is somebody who a year ago at this time, when we were previewing games this season last year when he was at Georgia, everyone was saying he could win the Heisman Trophy and he was going to be a top five pick in the NFL draft. Now, the season kind of unfolded. He struggled with interceptions, had a couple rough losses, and then probably most importantly had elbow surgery. He had, you know, Tommy John surgery on his elbow, so that's a massive question mark. But the guy, from all accounts, he's fully recovered. He's full speed, so he should be good to go. And then Notre Dame does have the returning, probably the best running back in the entire country, and Jeremiah Love, who's a really dynamic back who helped them last year. But they're starting C.J. Carr, who we know nothing about other than he's Lloyd Carr's grandson. Like, that's all we really know about him. He's a very green quarterback. So I think that game is going to be a slugfest. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game down in Miami. And you talk about programs that need a win. Notre Dame is the favorite in that game, and it's for a reason. But Miami desperately needs to win that game, sort of to recapture some of the moment they took last year and to have sort of that signature win, which they really did lack last year. Even though Cam Ward was so special, they finished the season 10-2, just missed out in the playoffs. They need that signature win playing at home in Miami.
Bring this one up because we're here in D.C. We've got some Virginia Tech alums. I don't expect them to be terrific, but they take on South Carolina, who I think is going to be nasty. Danny, I have all sorts of weaknesses, and one of mine is if I see a documentary that involves somebody, I end up falling in love with that person. So I'm now on the Lenore Sellers Heisman Trophy campaign because I watched the SEC documentary on Netflix. I think that guy's going to be a baller. Preview that game for us and then Sellers the season.
So I totally agree with you. I saw that documentary as well. I thought there were some breakout stars in that one. I thought Lenore Sellers were. I thought Shane Beamer was. Yep. You know, he's out there with his family, taking his kids to school and going to breakfast. I love that personal, you know, I love that when you get to kind of learn it because all we do is like criticize people and, oh, who's going to win, who can't. And you see that personal aspect. You're like, oh, yeah, they're humans too. Lenore Sellers is off the charts. Athleticism, arm talent, size, stature. He's a massive, massive kid that everybody is really high on. My one concern with him, he did lose his offensive coordinator. And I do think it could be a potential downgrade at coordinator. So he's got some new pieces. South Carolina as a group, one of the reasons they had that big year last year was they had a lot of NFL talent. They had a secondary player named Nick Amonwari. They had Kyle Kennard, a defensive end that got drafted. And they still do have Dylan Simpson on the other side of the ball. but there's just some new pieces there. And I was actually a little bit surprised that the number is this tight. Like, I think if you just said perception-wise, look at these two programs, you'd probably say, man, South Carolina is probably a two-touchdown favorite. The fact that they're not actually makes me kind of like Virginia Tech a little bit in the spot because their quarterback, Kyron Drones, is somebody who's getting a new offensive coordinator, but I think it's an upgrade. And he's somebody, again, a year ago, people were picking Virginia Tech to be this team that could be a surprise in the ACC. They fell well short of expectations. But Brent Pry, their head coach, is a defensive coach. I think the one thing you saw Illinois do in the bowl game was take away Lenora Sellers as a runner. I think that's going to be priority number one to him. And you talk about somebody who's coaching for his, you know, future. It is Brent Pry at Virginia Tech. So I think that game might be closer than people think because the odds makers are usually way more correct than, you know, the experts, so to speak.
You can see why we love having Danny Cannell on Bet Online. Updated college football playoff win total, conference Heisman Trophy, college football week one lines. They've got it all. We'll let you out on this, and you can take this wherever you want to. But as Danny said, localizing it, we're in the DMV here. We've got Maryland fans. I think about JMU as a huge fan base at this point. And then even the University of Virginia. Anything locally that stands out or you're interested in with any of those programs this year?
Yeah. Can you guys tell me who's going to start for the Terps? Is Malik Washington going to go? I mean,
he'll play this weekend, I think.
Yeah, so I think so too. But I do think, like, Coach Loxley's great. He's a great offensive mind. I think he's got a really good relationship with his quarterbacks. They've got, you know, you guys obviously know about him as a, you know, highly touted freshman that's coming in there. But to start a true freshman is a big decision. Like, if he's ready, I love it. But if he's not, you can also kind of derail his confidence and kind of things can go off the rails. I think that's one of the most important decisions you've seen Mike Loxley have to make in just quarterback development. What do they decide to do? How much do they play him? Do they expose him out there and just say, all right, this is going to be a bumpy year, we're going to roll with him? Or do they try to protect him somewhat? Because I think he's got an insane amount of talent and could be somebody that helps bring back Maryland to that 8 and 9 win total. But I do think this year could be a little bit more of a struggle. And then Virginia, I think they're quietly a team that's been spending a little bit more money. And I do think it's you know, it's much needed. And I'm curious to see, because this is a big year for Tony Elliott, if he can kind of take a step forward and be more competitive in a tougher out in the ACC.
Dan, you're the best, buddy. Always appreciate it, man. Enjoy this weekend.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the games. Always great being on.
Yeah, same with you. There's Danny Cannell. Bet Online made him possible. That game, noon on Saturday, cannot come soon enough.
It's just so perfect.
And now that I know YouTube TV's got to deal with Fox and I'm not going to have to miss it, it could start right now as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, let's say that game didn't exist. It would still be a pretty great weekend. I mean, Alabama's at Florida State. Florida State's probably not going to be great, but still, that's, you know, pretty storied programs, pretty marquee. You mentioned the LSU-Clemson game. We talked Notre Dame and Miami. It's already a pretty good weekend. Now you've got one of the biggest matchups to start a season that I can remember. Phenomenal.
Must be day and day.
Been far too long since we've heard this banger. Keep it playing, Landfill. Crank that. Crank that, soldier boy. Only one man has the audacity, the ganas,
to have this as his
this is walk-up song.
Is he talking about football?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, Football Talk on 106.7 The Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit Paramount Plus. .com/NFL to get started. You talking about college football? I'll do that too.
Our guy Denton Day is so brave that he chose "What's New Pussycat" by Tom Jones, written by Burt Bacharach, as his walk-up song. Denton,
well, he wears fanny packs.
He wears crazy
and
stuff.
Socks with the toe flip flop.
Denton, what was the process upon which you landed on "What's New Pussycat"?
Landfill picked it. That was the process.
Well, hey, we kind of figured Landfill did that.
Yeah, there's no way you thought I'd show. It's not a bad song, but I that would not be my choice.
I don't know.
Song.
If it's your walk-up song,
you are just weird enough that you might have picked that. Like, I didn't think you did, but there's a possibility that you did, that you just oddly love Tom Jones or something.
I can confirm that I did. That is the one thing where I'm relatively normal. That's the one area.
Good to know. Let's get down to business, dude. I know there was week zero last week, But this weekend, Labor Day weekend, college football takes over. There are massive, massive games.
Yeah.
And you'll be starting this weekend with college football overtime on SiriusXM U College. Every Saturday, I mean, you're grinding, dog. Midnight to 2 a.m., but
I love it, dog.
You get really good guests. You talk to coaches, players. Get us ready for this weekend. It all starts Texas-Ohio State Saturday at noon.
Yeah, well, you guys will be hyped. I start tonight. We're really grinding week one because we got a bunch of great games tonight. But the big one is obviously Texas and Ohio State. It's two of the best teams in the country, and you have all the hype with this Arch Manning kid. Big last name. Texas is number one, preseason number one for the first time in school history, which is crazy because they've been such a good team for such a long time, and they've allocated so much money over the course of their history to football that you just assume somewhere in like the 90s, the 2000s, that they would have been number one before, and they have not. So there's all – like it's going to be an incredible game. I think Ohio State's going to win it, though. I think there's too much going for Texas right now in terms of the hype. I don't know what Arch Manning is. We've seen him play against the worst team in the SEC and a bunch of nobodies. I think he's a good quarterback, and I think with what they have at Texas in terms of skill position players and the coach in Stark, they'll be able to make sure that Arch plays winning football throughout the course of the season. But to just expect that he's going to be awesome and blow the doors off of the defending national champion week number one, I don't know that I can get there yet. But I'm looking forward to it, man. It's going to be a big-time game at noon, too, to kick this thing off. Like, I don't want anything more in life than that.
Then we know – I know you follow football very closely, college football. And, like, Arch, my question about him is, if he was what they all say he is, why didn't he overtake my dude when he kept messing up?
Because Sark is stubborn. I think that says more about the coach than it does the quarterback. You know, college football coaches are just the most stubborn human beings, B. Mitch, in the world.
Yeah,
they can
but those
do no
backers
wrong.
That those backers that handed all that money to that university, if he was that damn good, they would have been like, look, you either play him or we're gonna get rid of you.
Nick Saban benched Jalen Hurts for Tua. Like Nick Saban's pretty stubborn
fella.
Like
if he was what they said, there's no way he wouldn't have been starting.
I mean, I'm with you, but I think that says more about Sark than anything. That's just him being stubborn because he loved Quinn Ewers. And Quinn Ewers, like, you got to remember, there was a lot of money allocated to Quinn Ewers. He is the face of NIL, effectively, because he came out of high school early to get paid at Ohio State. Yeah, there was a lot of money allocated to him as well. So it was like you were torn between two sides, and I think coaches are always just stubborn. They're going to go with the guy that's their guy, and I think that's what that was more than anything.
Is he worth the squeeze?
Arch will be, yeah. He's going to end up in New York for the Heisman. He's not going to win the Heisman because the favorite never wins the Heisman, the preseason favorite. But in the offense that Sark is going to run, I think he's definitely going to be – he's going to be worth it. I don't know if he's going to be a championship. I don't know if he's going to win him a championship, but I definitely think that they're going to be in the college football playoff again, and he's going to be a good quarterback.
Who's Ohio State's quarterback now?
Julian Sayin, a transfer from Alabama that hasn't really played a lot, so we don't really know a lot about him, but he replaces Will Howard to throw to Jeremiah Smith, which is going to be their offense. Hey, you see the best receiver over there? Throw him the football, and good things are going to happen.
That's the kid that was 18 last year, like the true freshman?
Yeah, the true freshman that probably would have went top five in the NFL draft this year because he was just unbelievable. Wow. Yeah, I think he's like not top five, but I think he's top six. I think he's 10-1 to win the Heisman. As a wide receiver, that's unheard of.
Smith and the true freshman at Bama, both those guys, Smith stayed at Ohio State. Did the other kids stay at Bama?
Yeah, Ryan Williams is still at Bama. He'll be wide receiver one in Kalen DeBoer's offense this year. That game is sneaky, Alabama-Florida State. I think that one could get really, really chippy. The former Boston College quarterback who now plays at Florida State, Thomas Castellanos, has been running his mouth about Alabama this entire offseason, so Bama might try and run it up on Florida State.
What is that guy's deal? I saw a lot. He seems to have run his mouth about a lot of things, right?
That is his approach. He says, I'm going to talk a lot. He doesn't really back it up a ton, but he continues taking the approach of I'm going to talk. You are going to know about me. You're going to know my name. If you want attention, he takes a very good approach for attention. Apparently, he just doesn't win a lot on the field. Now, part of that is because he was at Boston College before, and how much are you going to win at Boston College? Not a lot. You have better talent at Florida State, but yeah, I wouldn't be running my mouth against Alabama to start the season.
All right, Texas, Ohio State. Who you going with?
I'm going with Ohio State. I'm playing them laying 1.5, so I'm going with Ohio State.
All right, so the big games on Saturday, Texas Ohio State is at noon. Can you briefly get us up to speed on this, like, Dave Portnoy Fox Ohio State thing?
So Portnoy is working with Fox, who is effectively their Pat McAfee. You know, Pat McAfee draws a certain crowd. Dave Portnoy also pulls from that crowd. So you guys got McAfee on ESPN, we got Dave Portnoy. I have no idea who actually banned him and who didn't, if that was a Fox thing, if that was an Ohio State thing. I can't imagine that Fox would pay whatever the money they're paying Dave Portnoy, and it's not cheap. I can't imagine they would pay the money to Dave Portnoy and say, hey, you're not going to be on our set that much. We're going to pay you a ton of money to just not really be around. So I think this is more about Ohio State than it is about Fox. It just doesn't make sense that you would pay him all that money to not put him in the stadium.
They pay him not to work?
Yeah, pay him not to
work. He's a big Michigan guy, and Ohio State reportedly banned him from their campus.
Yeah, there's some people that obviously don't.
Well, you know, he's a little out there now. He is. I mean, he does his whole little, what's called, it's great.
You is a big game Saturday afternoon. It sounds like you're laying the points with Bama, even though on the road.
Yeah, yeah, 13.5 is within my wheelhouse to feel comfortable there.
Is what's my man's name at FSU? The guy that was at Memphis, is he still there?
Norvell, yeah, he's still there.
Is FSU supposed? I mean, it was wild. I was watching the Cowboys documentary on Netflix, and their three of their biggest stars when they were at their height was Michael Irvin from Miami, Emmitt Smith from the Gators, and then Deion from Florida State. And of those three programs now, maybe Miami's still a top 10 team?
Yeah, so they're top 10 just barely. They are 10 right now. They take on Notre Dame on Sunday, which will be a great matchup. Oh, wow. Florida would be the team that I would watch out for this year of the Florida teams. Florida State will be better because whatever you want to think about Castellanos, he's a little bit better or a lot of it better than DJU. So they'll be better this year. But the team to watch is Florida because DJ Lagway, I think, has the biggest ceiling amongst a lot of the quarterbacks across the country. He can do a lot of things really well. Rocket arm, can move the pocket. Mobility is a threat in there as well. So Florida might be the team to really watch out for. They just have such a daunting schedule again in the SEC, which most teams in the SEC do. Everybody's so good in that conference.
We're talking with our friend Denton Day doing our college football preview. You can follow Denton at The Denton Day. Listen to his work on SiriusXM College. He'll be on tonight, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. He'll be on all weekend as college football really gets center stage to kick things off. All right, we already talked Texas Ohio State is the big one. Then you get Florida State Bama at 3:30. The night game that everybody, I think, will be tuned into, oh, yeah. LSU at Clemson. Clemson has a lot of championship buzz about them. Obviously, the easier path in the ACC. LSU I don't believe they've won an opener under Brian Kelly. Like, they're correct. Desperate to win a first game. This thing might be a pretty epic game.
This is going to be a headbanger. It's a battle of the Tigers, and it's a battle of the two programs that call their home Death Valley. So there's a lot going for it. Mm-hmm. And then on one hand, you have a championship contender in Clemson that's number four in the country. And on the other hand, you have Brian Kelly, who's under some pressure, not on the hot seat, but he's under some pressure, and both teams have returning quarterbacks. Like, I've taken an approach, guys, that when I'm gambling, at least in the early portion of the season, I'm going to really focus on teams that have returning quarterbacks, which makes this matchup incredibly enticing. But Clemson's defensive line is just filthy this year. And, you know, LSU has a good offensive line, but they lose their best offensive lineman to the draft. He's now playing in New England with Will Campbell. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to stop this Clemson defensive line. This Clemson, both their defensive and offensive line, like the roster in total, whatever you feel about Cade Klubnik, he's not Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson, but the rest of the roster is built way more like those rosters of Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson when they were constantly winning championships than it has been in recent years. So this is much more of like a 2017 roster build than whatever we've seen in the 2020s where Dabo Sweeney has his head in the sand. I'm really, really excited about this Clemson team.
How are their defensive backs in Clemson?
They have the younger brother of Terrell, the guy, A.J. Terrell, who's now in Atlanta. His younger brother is on the team. So the defensive backs are good. Not the strong suit of the defense. It's definitely that defensive line. But they'll definitely be able to cover some guys. Like, you're going to have to get the ball out of your hands really, really quick if you're going to want to generate offense against this Clemson team.
So, and then Sunday, we got two awesome matchups, too. Virginia Tech, the Fighting Toby Altizers at South Carolina. I mean, that's kind of the Beamer Bowl, right? Because yeah. Shane's coaching now in Columbia and Tech's going down there. I really like Lenoris Sellers. I assume he's fully healthy, ready to rock. I feel like that South Carolina team really has a chance at making the college football playoff. What do you think, Hokies Gamecocks?
They being South Carolina, need to dominate in this one. I think if they don't dominate, it very much favors Virginia Tech, because that means something in the game plan is going sideways. You know, and credit to Shane Beamer. Like, he understands this Virginia Tech roster is drastically different than last year. The coaching staff is a little different than last year. You're plucking from guys that, in terms of on the roster, that played at other very big schools. You know, some coaches that were coaching at different levels of football. So there's a lot of things that he has to prepare for this. But South Carolina, the worst thing that can happen to them is being what Oregon was at the beginning of the year last year. Now, Oregon obviously had a really great season, but you remember they were barely beating Idaho State in like week number two of the season. They just couldn't generate offense. They had all this hype with Dylan Gabriel. They just couldn't generate offense or be effective in the red zone. With Lenoris Sellers having all of the Heisman hype that he does, they need to make sure that they hit the ground running. They should really take Tech to the woodshed, but it'll be interesting to see how Virginia Tech fights back with drones.
Where is Denton Day leaning?
I'm leaning South Carolina to lay the 7.5.
Okay, I like that. And then, I mean, another big one. There's so many good matchups. Catholics versus Convicts,
yeah.
Sunday night, 7:30, Notre Dame, Miami. Notre Dame is favored on the road down there in Miami. What do you make of that? Who's the – Carson Beck, what's the guy's name?
Yeah, it's Carson quarterback. Beck, the guy from Georgia – who was allegedly maybe dating one? He was dating one of the Cavenders, then maybe cheated on her. I don't know. His social media is really weird. And then C.J. Carr is playing quarterback for Notre Dame. Obviously, Notre Dame was in the championship last year. They lose Riley Leonard to the NFL, so C.J. Carr is going to be their quarterback. That Marcus Freeman named late last week, early this week. So that this should be a fun one. I hate what I'm about to say. I have Miami covering the 2.5.
Really?
Because
why?
So I look at it. It's a top 10 matchup. And some of the sites that I use to determine where the money is, 77% of the money is in the direction of Notre Dame. And I took the same approach with Iowa State and Kansas State. If it's a ranked-on-ranked matchup and, you know, 70% of money is with one direction, just by nature, I'm going to go the other direction. So because Notre Dame is getting a bulk of the money, because people don't really like Carson Beck, they don't really like Mario Cristobal, I'm just naturally taking the contrarian side and going with Miami to cover the 2.5.
Okay, I don't hate that. And then Monday night, we get Monday Night Football, B.
Hell yeah.
The debut of Bill Belichick in Chapel Hill.
Yes, indeed.
TCU coming to town. What on earth do we know about this Tar Heel football team? What is going to happen here?
We know that Bill Belichick is dating a 24-year-old, and it feels like that's about it. This over is like crazy, because just the idea of a Bill Belichick team potentially surrendering enough to hit a 56.5 is nuts to me. I don't think their offense is going to be particularly good, that being North Carolina, but it's not like TCU's offense is going to be spectacular either. So I'm looking at this total. It was 58.5, and it's
they're only
down.
Favored by 3.5, though.
Yeah, they are only TCU. Favored by 3.5 because TCU's not all that good. I have no idea. This is going to be entertainment value. You know, they're going to show Jordan Hudson 1,000 times on the television.
That's the question. Do they have a wager on that? How many times she's shown?
I mean, she's gonna get the Taylor Swift treatment.
I'm taking the over.
I'm taking the over too. B. It's gonna inflate her ego. She already filed to patent gold digger. I was like, that's a pretty like well known phrase. I'm pretty sure Kanye West and Jamie Foxx have that.
They can't let her patent that.
No, they can't.
There's been too many before her. She ain't the first.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there was a whole big craze about this in 2004 when that song dropped, and now she wants to take it, you know, 20 years later. I don't know that she has the ability to do that, but she also was not – she was like 3 years old when that song came out. So what does she know about Kanye and Jamie Foxx?
All right. Who do you like this year that maybe people are sleeping on, and who do you think might be overrated?
I'm going to the well again. I have Nebraska making the college football playoff this year. That's probably –
they start tonight, right?
They start tonight. Against Cincinnati, my three biggest long shots for the playoff are Florida at 7-1, Nebraska. I got Nebraska 7-1. You can get it right now. Most books at 5-1, and then Georgia Tech out of the ACC. I think they could go 10-2.
Georgia Tech
at 7-1. That physicality that Georgia Tech is going to bring—they bring a lot of that their good playmakers back from last year. And an ACC that's relatively weak, I think Georgia Tech can get to the college football playoff.
Well, don't we Georgia Tech tomorrow night at Colorado, right? Yeah. What is no Travis Hunter, no Shador? What is Deion got left there in Boulder?
They have Liberty football legend Caden Salter playing quarterback. He got Liberty to a Fiesta Bowl that we're not going to mention the score of because I flew out to Arizona to watch my team get whooped. But he's now playing in Colorado, so I'm happy for him.
I don't know the score. What's the score?
Well, they were up 6-0 after the first quarter. That's all you need to know. Who cares?
How did it end, though? How did it end?
Well, Liberty still had six, and Oregon had a lot more than six. It was not good.
All right, let's quickly go through the locals. How you feeling about my Turtles? That's a low win total, dude, for Maryland football.
It is a low win total. What is it, 4.5, I think, at most books? I imagine Maryland is going to win more than 4.5 games. I imagine they're going to be bowl eligible.
They should open 3-0, hopefully.
They should be bowl eligible. Like, for them, it's just getting past and getting into that upper echelon of the Big Ten, but I imagine that number is too low. So I think they'll at least get 5 or 6 wins and be bowl eligible.
I'm cool with them. The regular echelon of the Big Ten. I just want Maryland to be pretty good, go to a bowl game. Lox is great in bowl games. Like,
just get away from Rutgers and Northwestern, please.
Yeah, dude.
The one game tonight that we need to pay attention to.
Not even tonight. 5:30 kick, Boise State, South Florida. Boise State on the road, favored by 5.5. They are obviously the front runner to get to the college football player from the group of five, but South Florida is also in that conversation. They're just not ranked. So I'm on South Florida tonight covering the 5.5, and it starts at 5:30.
Really?
It's fantastic. It's cool. I wish every ranked game on a Thursday started at 5:30. I'm in heaven.
So you going with South Florida?
Yeah, I'm going South Florida tonight.
Done. Consider that done. What are they, the Bulls? Go Bulls.
My daughter would love this. I mean, my son-in-law would love this because he went to South Florida.
They're the Bulls, right?
Yeah, they're the Bulls.
Yeah.
All in on the Bulls. Go Bulls. You got any winners this weekend, dude?
So I'm going to go Ohio State this weekend. I'm debating. Some of these lines are like massive, but I'm going Alabama. So I gave you that one, Alabama lane 13.5. And I'm going Clemson laying the 4 at with the LSU matchup. At night, and then I'm on Miami on Saturday night, the 2.5. I haven't officially played South Carolina yet, but I'm leaning South Carolina over Virginia Tech. I'll tweet that on Sunday if I end up making that play.
We're getting to the time of the year where you got to start texting me again, all right?
Yeah, I know.
All right. We appreciate you, D-Day. You're going to be working a lot, man. Enjoy it.
Yeah, not a lot of sleep for me, but I wouldn't have it any other way. See you, boys.
You'll be all right.
Yeah, you'll be all right. You're a young man.
You're young, man.
That's our boy Denton Day. Follow him at The Denton Day. If you're looking for some late-night college football content, Denton Day is your guy. He'll have wrap-ups of all the big games. Hell, he'll have wrap-ups of all the games. He's working tonight through Monday night. Got great interviews. Check him out at The Denton Day. Kind enough to join us on the Rude Guest Hotline. You know what else is kind? The Labor Day sale at Offenbacher's. We're talking huge price reductions on outdoor furniture, fire pits, hot tubs, swim spas. Think about it. All summer, your kids were beating up your outdoor furniture. They probably broke the springs on a couple of the chairs, probably got some markers on the other ones. Go get a great deal on new outdoor furniture right now at the Labor Day sale at Offenbacher's. Here's the other thing. You don't have to stop swimming just because summer's over. With a swim spa from Offenbacher's, you'll keep the fun going year-round. They're more affordable than a pool and give you all the soothing benefits of a hot tub. Plus, more exciting news, Offenbacher's is now offering saunas. No better way to relax, and it's great for your body. Take care of your medicals. Check out a sauna. You can get an indoor one, an outdoor one, or those infrared ones, which heat you up fast. They've got them in the Annapolis and Herndon showrooms. Make this Labor Day unforgettable. Visit Offenbacher's in Annapolis, Gainesville, Herndon, and Rockville and create the backyard retreat you've always dreamed of.
Say good morning to Bill Roth, play-by-play voice of the Virginia Tech Hokies. Pre-game at 1 p.m. on Team 980, kickoff at 3 p.m. as the Hokies are in Atlanta to take on the South Carolina Gamecocks. Bill, hello.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you.
Man, it is good to be back with you guys again. It's always great to visit with you every week, and it's great to start the college football season. What a great weekend. The lineup of games crazy. All weekend long is so good.
A lot of great games, a lot of high-profile opponents, and that's the case for the Hokies facing the Gamecocks. Is it weird for the Hokies fan base to root against a guy whose last name is Beamer? Shane Beamer, obviously, at South Carolina, the son of Virginia Tech royalty in Frank Beamer. Is that a weird conflict of interest at all for the Hokies fan base?
A little bit. I know they want to win the game. Mm-hmm. We actually went over to Frank Beamer's house this past week to record a podcast, and we asked him that. I said, how is it going to be for you? And he said he's going to be a little bit happy and a little bit sad regardless of how the game turns out. And I said, yeah, but what about during the game? Mm-hmm. And he told a funny story. He said, if it gets close and there's some big plays happening, I'm just going to go to the bathroom. He's not even going to watch. Right. So for him, it's going to be really hard. But, you know, I think the Hokie fans, here's what we would like. We would like South Carolina to have its greatest season ever this year for Shane and go 11-1.
Well, let's not beat around the bush, Bill. This is a huge year for Coach Pry, the entire staff. I think it's a big year for Whit Babcock. I've said that many times. You know, Coach is 16-21. This is, you know, they go to the bowl game last year, and, you know, a 6-win season for a lot of schools is great to go to a bowl game, but not for Virginia Tech. But, again, the NIL thing and the portal have been a very difficult challenge for Virginia Tech as opposed to some other big schools. But they let go of two coordinators. They bring two new coordinators in. You can tell us about your thoughts on these guys, but it comes down to the quarterback, as it does for most schools. Kyron Drones, who did not have a great year last year because of a lot of reasons. Certainly the injury hurt him. But now he's got a new coordinator. He's got different players. How are you feeling specifically about Kyron Drones, their quarterback?
He seems a lot better because his coach is someone who has coached quarterbacks before. Phil Montgomery is Virginia Tech's new offensive coordinator. If you remember the great Baylor teams, RG3, his Heisman Trophy winning season down there, and then the guys who followed Griffin at Baylor, Phil was the offensive coordinator there. They scored a lot of points, really an air raid thing, and they ran 110 plays a game. We're not going to do that. But then Phil went to Tulsa as the head coach. He won. In fact, Frank Beamer's last game as head coach was in the Independence Bowl against Tulsa. And Montgomery was the head coach of Tulsa. The score was like, 59-52, something like that. So this is the first time Drones, at least at Virginia Tech, has had an offensive coordinator who was a true quarterback guy. The two coordinators he had previously were offensive linemen. Right. So he seems to be better. He's healthy, and that's the most important thing. Last year was really hard for him in a lot of ways. So we've got 30 new players on this team. 11 of them are new since the end of the spring, since school started here a couple weeks ago. So I'm curious to see how they all mold together and mesh together. But South Carolina is similar. Shane's got a bunch of new players, too. They lost their back end is back on defense, but their linemen, except for their All-American and Stewart, and linebackers are all new. So there's a lot of change, and that's the modern-day college football. You want to get a feel for other teams' rosters, but it's a big challenge to get a feel for your own until you play.
Bill, the Hokies were 0-5 in games decided by 7 points or fewer last fall. That can't continue. Was that a huge point of emphasis during the offseason? Like, hey, when it gets to the fourth quarter, we have to close out these games and not lose these 3, 6, and 7-point affairs.
I think that's why they got two new coordinators.
Yeah,
100%.
Part of it.
And the strength coach is new because they did fade late. We talked about this a bunch last year. You guys remember here on the show, we talked last year that after the ninth week of last year, had the game stopped at the 2-minute timeout in the fourth quarter, had you stopped the game, they were 8-0-1.
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah.
But then you lose to Miami in the last play of the game. You lose the overtime at Syracuse. I mean, that Syracuse game, Hokies were up 21-3 in the third quarter.
Yep.
And ended up losing. Vanderbilt went to overtime and lost. So any game that came down to the wire in 2024, Virginia Tech lost. So, they were 6-6 in the regular season, but that was pretty close to a 9-win team. But the problem is that we lost a bunch of guys to the NFL. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that are gone, that have made rosters, whether they're on the team or on practice squad. So we got a lot of new faces, but they've really focused on conditioning, and they've really focused on
You know, they got dinged with 10-second runoff last year. They lost some games where the mechanics of clock management got them.
So how are you feeling about this particular game? Because Sellers is legit. He's 6'3", 240. He ran for 700 yards last year. He's like, you know, trying to tackle a tight end. A lot of people think he's certainly a Heisman candidate, and a lot of people think he's a first-round pick. Now, you're not playing down in Columbia. You're playing Atlanta. I'm sure there'll be a lot of Hokie fans down there. But you pointed out some good points about new players on both teams, but how are you feeling about this particular game?
You know, this is going to be a total cop-out. I think this is like the first two games of the season are against SEC teams, Vanderbilt next week here.
Right.
And both of these teams have quarterback. The Hokies have to be a really good tackling team because between Sellers and Diego Pavia, they're playing two SEC quarterbacks who both had really good seasons a year ago and who are really good at it's third and six. You defend the play well, and they get the first down anyway. Uh-huh. I went back and watched Sellers' highlight clip from last year, and like all of his great plays are on third down.
Right.
Like the thing breaks down, and he makes one guy miss, and there he's running into the end zone to beat Clemson. And the same thing with Pavia, right? I mean, he was a handful for us and everybody in that conference last year. So we've got two SEC teams, games on Sunday and then Saturday. It's a short week. It's almost like you're taking the final exam the first day of class. They've got to be good early, and these are big games for our team, our program, huge, our coaching staff, and we're not opening up with an FCS team. But you're right. Like both of these quarterbacks.
What's Pavia's eligibility? We got about a minute left. What's his eligibility?
He's good. He won. Yeah, he got an injunction.
So he's definitely in. Okay.
He's a well-paid Vandy Commodore.
Okay.
All right, Bill. Always love talking to you. It's Bill Ross.
Talk to you in a couple weeks.
The Hokies.
Thanks, thank you, fellas. Buddy. Have a great weekend. Happy Labor Day.
Yep. And right, again, you too, buddy. Pregame on Team 980 at 1 p.m. and kick at 3 p.m.
This is how
Sunday.
Big this game is. If they beat South Carolina, which is a tall task, all right, and I don't think they're going to beat them, but that's just me. Then they get the home opener against Vandy. Mm-hmm. Then you get Old Dominion and Wofford. All right. You got to beat Vandy, especially after what happened last year.
That's
your home opener.
Disaster,
And then you're going to beat ODU and Wofford. So you could be looking if they can pull the upset Sunday at a 4-0 start. But, again, that's a lot to ask.
After the neutral site game in Atlanta, four of the first five are at Lane Stadium. Right. And the one road trip is to NC State. So it's not like they're flying cross-country to travel. Yeah. It's a pretty close game.
But in Vanderbilt, if Pavia is there, he's going to be an issue. That team is getting better.
He's a really good player.
Are you going to the Terps game tomorrow?
I'm not going to the Terps game tomorrow. I will go to at least one or two Terps games. Tomorrow will not be one of them.
Hmm.
All right, well, but I do hope they win by 15 points because that will keep the parlay alive.